B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
He's aware that he had a lackluster beginning of the season, and then I think he finished very strong towards the end of the season. 610-632-0975. Coming up in a minute, we're going to speak to our good friend Jimmy Kemsky of Philly Voice, but we do have to tell you, you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast, 8 o'clock hours, brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. And you know what, Trey, tomorrow we're going to be we're going to have you finish up playing Cupid with our
courting on the court,
courtesy of our great friends Rothman Orthopedics and the Philadelphia 76ers. Bob and Jamie will be there in a game that will be next week with the 76ers playing, and Jamie and Bob will be there with the couple that we have set up. Our promotions team has crunched the numbers through our dating algorithm, much like that of Tinder. Or Bumble, even. Much like the algorithm, we have found the perfect match to go to a game together, and I believe that these two people will find love.
Yeah, it was a lot of science that went into it. A
lot of algorithms, Trey. Yeah, analytics.
Yes.
There was numbers flying everywhere.
Computers just going off.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what we do here. No stone left unturned.
That's right.
And now on the line with us from PhillyVoice.com, a great man, a man that, you know what, does inspire controversy, our good friend Jimmy Kemsky. Jimmy, good morning, sir.
Who just did that computer voice?
That would be Trey. That was an actual computer. I mean, that was an actual computer.
That sounded like the guy in on Police Academy.
Yes, exactly. Now, Jimmy, before we get to this Alshon Jeffrey stuff, why did you find it necessary to pit reporters against one another in their question off battles versus Doug Peterson?
Well, that's my day-to-day life during the regular season. We joke about that after each press conference, If there's a particularly contentious, you know, head-to-head question face-off, then, you know, we'll kind of laugh about that afterward. And, you know, we've kind of discussed, like, who's the best among us. So I figured I'd put it all on paper and sort of, you know, lay out the power rankings on who's best at getting their questions in during these podium press conference sessions, and then also add a little bit of the scouting report on some of the other reporters.
It was a great piece you did on Philly Voice, man. I really enjoyed it, and I also enjoyed some of the other reporters, refuting your claims. Nothing in my book will ever top Andy Reid versus Les Bowen. That was contentious for reasons I still don't understand.
right. And Les has had a fun trajectory because, you know, he butt heads up a little bit with Andy. But then, like, in the Chip years, Chip, when he started press conferences, he'd go Les, as if, like, go ahead, Les, you got the first question, like, on every press conference. So Chip really loved Les.
Oh, yeah, that was weird. Yeah, you're right. That's an odd trajectory, if you will. Speaking of Jimmy Kemsky of Philly Voice, so, Jimmy, the latest article we saw from you is on Alshon Jeffrey, and I'm putting number one priority in getting Carson Wentz a weapon. It seems like nobody has faith in a healthy DeSean Jackson for him to be healthy is what I mean by that. And then you had Greg Ward basically come in and help save the season as a wide receiver. No one has confidence in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So it leaves us to how do they create space if they move on from Alshon? And is there any chance that they actually do that this offseason?
Oh, yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance that they move on from Alshon Jeffrey this offseason. And it'll be a lot easier to move on from him if there's a new collective bargaining agreement. And that's gonna require sort of a nerdy explanation on that, which I'll get into right now.
Okay, nerd away, Jimmy. Nerd away.
So normally teams would have what's called the June 1st cut option at their disposal. But because we're currently in the final year of the current CBA, teams don't have that option. And essentially what that June 1st option does is it allows teams to kind of push a portion of the dead money hit into a future year that otherwise would be on the current cap. So, for example, Alshon Jeffrey, if you cut him, he's going to count for $26 million in dead money, which would be unprecedented.
Yeah.
That'd be the highest dead money hit in the history of the NFL, as far as I understand. With a June 1 distinction, they could just take like a $15 or $16 million hit in 2020, and then it would be like 9 or 10 in 2021. I don't have the figures in front of me right now. But it would be a lot more palatable to do it that way. than it would than to just take that $26 million hit. So, again, like I said, they don't have that option at their disposal right now. But presumably, if the new CBA got done, then they would. If the CBA gets done, which a lot of people think it will, before the start of the new league year, then I think he's gone.
Okay, now, would there be any chance of IRing a guy with a Liz Frank injury? And that was our Jamie's theory as well, and you might have touched on it. Would there be any idea to IR Alshon in an effort to move on from him?
No, that wouldn't be an option for them. So he wouldn't be eligible for IR. If anything, they could put him on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, prior to the start of training camp. And in that event, he would still be around the team. And then once he gets healthy, then you got to take him off of it. You can't just put healthy guys on injured reserve, or else you're going to have big problems with the NFLPA. So, okay. either keep him or you cut him is really the only two options. There's a possibility in theory of a trade, but in speaking with Joel Corey, who's the former agent and analyst for CBS, who helped me with my story. He thinks that you'd have to trade Alshon along with a second-round pick to some team just to get rid of him and his contract.
Woo! All right. What are the odds then? What would you put it at for Alshon Jeffrey to not be an Eagle next year?
80%.
80% he wouldn't be an Eagle. Mm-hmm. I'm loving up on that. I love that number, Jimmy. Love that number. Now, the other thing is upgrading your wide receiving core. We know that they're going to draft a wide receiver. Whatever happens in either free agency or a trade in the offseason,
yeah.
We know at some point they're going to be drafting a wide receiver, hopefully in the first round. Stephon Diggs is a name that has come out as of late that might be available from the Minnesota Vikings. Eagles at least knock on that door.
Yeah, so they got to add, in my opinion, at least three receivers between, free agency and the draft. And Diggs is a guy that's out there. I don't think he's a really viable option because if the Vikings move off from him, they'll take a big hit themselves. And if you're a team trading for him, then you got to kind of have to make it worth the Vikings' while to take on that big hit and also lose a good player. By the way, I mean, we all saw that Diggs is a good player. Based on what he did to the Eagles in whatever it was, week 7 or week 8 this past year, where he just totally went off on them. Obviously he's a good player, but with the Eagles' age situation, they were the second oldest team heading into the NFL this past offseason, and we all saw the injury problems that they've had the last 3 years, and I attribute part of that to their age across their roster. So to trade for a guy who, it's not like he's an older guy, but I think they need as many of their high draft picks as they can get their hands on because the roster as a whole really just has to get younger. And there's enough decent options in free agency that they can attack this offseason without having to lose a draft pick. And then as you mentioned, this is widely considered to be one of the best wide receiver draft classes ever. So I would assume that they're going to take a wide receiver very high in this draft, whether that be first round, second round, and even double or triple dip on wide receivers, in addition to adding a solid option for Carson Wentz in free agency.
Jimmy, so staying on the offensive side of the ball, it's kind of a player that's been, not really talked about much and someone who I hope they bring back. But what's the status with Jordan Howard in your mind?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to find much in the way of a robust market for his services in free agency. And the reason I say that is because we already kind of saw how the NFL values him when the Bears traded him for a 6th-round pick.
Right.
And that was a year ago before he had all these shoulder injury problems. So I think that the perception out there is that he's going to, go to some team and become, sort of the bell cow back again. I just don't see that. And also, when you look league-wide, there really aren't that many teams that don't already have a pretty good running back. So I think they're going to be able to bring him back. I think they want to bring him back, and I think they're going to be able to bring him back on sort of a reasonable deal. I would assume it would probably be like a 1-year deal that, he can kind of get back on the field, prove that he can stay healthy.
Good.
Because he did, miss the back half of last season. But he was very good when he played for the Eagles last year, and I think they want to bring him back.
Yeah.
What is it going to look like for JP and Big V out there?
So JP, I would assume, is probably also going to get something in the ballpark of a 1-year deal. He made about $8.6 million for the Eagles this past year. He'll probably draw that kind of interest around the league as well. And then Big V, I don't really have a great handle on how teams will view him. Obviously, he's come in and been you know, decent enough as a spot starter here and there for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many teams would view him as sort of an answer as a starter, either at left tackle or right tackle. At a minimum, he's a good swing tackle who can play both of those positions in a reserve role. The thing that I will say is that offensive linemen get paid in free agency because there's a dearth of talent in the NFL right now along many offensive lines across the league. So I think a team may actually open their wallets and overpay for Big B.
Mm-hmm. Do you see JP coming back this year, though?
I don't. I think, they use so many resources. They use, not only their first-round pick, but they traded up to get Andre Dillard last year. And he had a few down moments. Like, I don't think he should have been playing in right tackle
no.
that Week 12 game against Seattle or whatever, or whenever that was. I think early on, the first game he ever played, he's going against the combination of Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter against the Vikings, which is a really tough ask. He had a tough game there. But I thought he got better as the year went along and he got more opportunities. But, just on the resources that they put out to acquire that guy, you can't have him sitting on the bench. He's got to play at some point, and they got to put him out there and let him get better.
Speaking with Jimmy Kemsky of Philly Voice, phillyvoice.com. Jimmy, the other name that's come up recently in maybe a trade talk or two is Darius Slay. Eagles knock on that door as well.
Yeah, I kind of go back to the same theory that I had on Stephon Diggs. He's going to cost a day two pick, either a second or third round pick, in my opinion. And on top of that, he wants to be the highest paid cornerback in the NFL. So, in my view, I think they're better off just sort of signing, because the quarterback free agent class this offseason isn't terrible. Like, I think Byron Jones is a decent option. And there are some other guys that are certainly better than anything the Eagles have this past season. So I would imagine that they're probably just going to sign a guy in free agency rather than also giving up a day two pick.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the other thing here is, and I wanted to touch on, was backup quarterback, because it's a weird role right now, because Sudfeld and McCown are going to be free agents, essentially. Do they bring either of them back, or do they go elsewhere with a Joe Flacco, Marcus Mariota? Where do you see them going in that role?
Yeah, they keep saying that they really view Nate Sudfeld as a legitimate number two, although their actions a year ago would kind of say otherwise. And maybe he was going to be the number two if he hadn't broken his wrist in the preseason. When that happened, obviously that's when they brought in Josh McCown. But then Josh McCown kept that number two job. Like, it didn't go back to Nate Sudfeld,
right?
Once he was healthy again. So it's, I agree, it's sort of an interesting position to watch this year. I don't think they're going to spend huge money there or anything like that. Marcus Mariota is a name that's kind of been thrown around a little bit. They could certainly draft and develop a guy like they tried last year with Clayton Thorson. They may go that route again, having 10 picks, or at least projected to have 10 picks in this upcoming draft. But that's not like a position that I have a great feel for at this point, whether they view Sudfeld as a number two or not. But I think they have so many other big needs between cornerback and wide receiver and now linebacker after you get rid of Nigel Bradham. And then you can throw safety on top of that, depending on what they do with either Rodney McLeod and or Malcolm Jenkins. So they have a lot of money that they have to spend on these other positions. I don't know that you can spend a lot on a backup quarterback this offseason.
Jimmy Kemsky, Philly Voice, always great to catch up with you, man. Keep the great stuff coming on Philly Voice, whether that be writer-driven, writer-battle-driven, writer-versus-coach-driven, or whether that be free agency-driven or draft. Whoever knows, it's all great stuff.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, man. Jimmy Kemsky, phillyvoice.com. Always good to catch up with you.
Yeah, writers love to be part of the story. Interesting about the IR option, though. I thought because of the injury and him not being ready, he would be eligible for the IR. Mm-hmm. Looks like Pop is it.
Yeah.
But sure seems like Jimmy thinks he gone.
80%.
Yeah.
That's a number that's going to stick out. That's the number that's going to stick out to me. 610-632-0975. All right. Coming up a little bit later, 9 o'clock, we're going to talk to Mark Jackson, NBC Sports Philadelphia pre- and post-game Sixers analyst, former Sixer himself, former Temple Owl as well. Talk about this, what could be the new look of the 76ers for the final 27 games of the regular season, how they'll fare as they come back from the All-Star game tonight. 8 o'clock tip-off right here on 97.5 The Fanatic as they take on the Kyrie Irving-less Brooklyn Nets this evening. Time of the Fanatic is 8:13.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Everybody recover from last night's holiday party?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm starting to come around.
Breakfast helped.
Yeah, that did. I'm coming around.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it's good to get together with everybody.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Have ourselves some good time. Oh, yeah. Tiramisu. Yes, please, and thank you. I'll have another.
Now. I love tiramisu.
A little breaded mahi-mahi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I indulged, I will say. It was good times last night getting together with everybody in the Beasley family, if you will. Coming up in this segment, we're going to go through Brett Brown's two highlights, I guess you would call them, from his media session yesterday at practice, because the Sixers returned to practice yesterday after the All-Star break. They returned to action tonight at 8 o'clock against the Nets, so that's cool. So we'll run through that. A little bit later, 9 o'clock, we'll talk to Mark Jackson. But also, in this hour, going on later today, is the trial of JT Realmuto. The arbitration hearing with JT Realmuto in the Phillies, because believe it or not, the Phillies are looking at $2.5 million, Trey, and going, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. $2.5 million? Nah. So instead of working out a long-term deal before you had to file for arbitration, the Phillies are now in the position that they're in right now. The catcher himself has already come out just a couple of days ago and said, "Nah, whatever. $2.5 million, or not. I'm still happy. I'm still going to go about my business."
Mr. Realmuto, do you have an opening statement? Yeah, this will be fun.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't have to say anything. No, we're good.
They've already acknowledged many times over he's the best catcher in baseball.
It's got to be the easiest case any agent has ever had.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. In avoiding arbitration, the Phillies have had a lot of success recently, because they ended up signing Scott Kingery 2 years ago to essentially what could be a 9-year, $65 million deal. Like, if Scott Kingery gets even close to what he was projected to be, that's a bargain. I mean, one of the best bargains in sports, not just baseball. And then Aaron Nola, like $12 million a year, is like a free pitcher. Like, that's, they've done very well for themselves in avoiding arbitration in years past. They weren't able to do it this time with JT Realmuto, so that makes me think that down the line, maybe next year after arbitration, hopefully he gets the $12.5 million he's after, that you do ink him for that long-term deal and you get something done, you know, for the upcoming season. Not for the upcoming season, but for the following seasons after that. So today is the arbitration hearing. We'll see how all that goes. But back to the 76ers. At practice yesterday, Brett Brown had some confusing things. And Trey, we have a man that speaks fluent Brett, and that man's name is Bob Cooney.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of a different take than Bob did when we talked about this earlier, but I want to get back into it. So Brett is talking about the new lineup with the Sixers, and it's Al Horford. And whether or not Al Horford is going to remain coming off the bench as he did in the last game before the All-Star break against the Clippers, which we all thought, it was like unlocking a door. It seemed like everything opened up offensively for the Sixers. So here's Brett as to what the plan is with Al Horford going forward, if it's still to have him come off the bench or go back in the starting lineup. Here's Brett.
I think at times it'll be dependent upon matchups. To think it's going to be erratic, I don't think that. I think in the rare case, like, there's something that's pretty clear. And I feel like that I'm not married to it as a be-all and end-all. It does interest me the most. And so I intend to pursue what you all saw against the Clippers more than not.
Bob, what is he saying there? Can you speak Brett for us, please? What is he telling us?
If Al comes to me and says, Brett, I think I need to be in the lineup, I am going to adhere to his suggestion. He has earned that through his 11 years and multiple All-Star appearances. So as much as I think this team might be better with him on the bench, not sure I want to tell him, no, you're going to stay there when I tell you to.
So the player will have more say than your average bear, so to speak.
And here I am hoping and praying that he embraces this bench role like nobody's business.
Okay, two things. That's ultimately up to the new starting five. Because if they play well and they win, and by the way, they win on the road by some act of God, then what case does Al Horford have to say he should be in the starting lineup when the new system is working?
Yeah.
And let's face it, Al Horford, he gonna get paid no matter what.
No matter what.
Would you also like to win?
Absolutely.
If you're winning, then zip. End of discussion. But what I mostly hear from Brett Brown there is that 99% of the time, Al Horford will be coming off the bench, except against one team. And that team is the Milwaukee Bucks. Maybe another mismatch where you want another big man down low against the Lakers when you're going to L.A., maybe. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, I think it's just against the Milwaukee Bucks when you want to be able to have as many defensive big men on the floor, including Ben Simmons, by the way, to play defense against a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo. So you have Ben Simmons, you would have Joel Embiid, and then you would have Al Horford. I think that's the only time you're really going to see Al Horford back in the starting lineup, because Brett acknowledges a mismatch potential in other games this season. I think that's most notable against the Bucks. That's the one time I think you'll see him back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that's interesting. And when you came up with that point this morning, I didn't think of that, and that does make you the wheels roll a little bit in the head, wondering if that's what he was alluding to. And we'll find out soon, because they do play Milwaukee on Saturday. The thing is, if they play well tonight, and Brett also said later in the press conference that he really wants to dial into this rotation now, if they win tonight and play well, I don't think it would be real smart of them to throw Horford back in the starting lineup, even though they're only going against, they're going against Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. I like the waves that they can throw it onto Tecumbo. I mean, you really do have a Ben Simmons, a Joel Embiid, and Al Horford. I would even throw Matisse Thybulle in there that you could throw on Antetokounmpo and really give him fits throughout a night. And if you have the luxury of doing that with four different guys that can use that energy defensively, four different guys against one, I really do like the way they match up against Milwaukee.
I think in the past that has worked rather well. One game, you had your struggles. The other game, you shot 48% from three. So, as much as I want to say their defense was impeccable, which it was. It was good, but their three-point shot was what starred in that game in Philly.
Right.
And they got two more matchups with Milwaukee, including one Saturday.
And I would love, real quick, Mark, for Horford to outwardly embrace this backup role, this bench role. Like coming on, I really would. I think it's the infusion that this team needs. I think he reads what Joel Embiid's about. If he sees, a little this from, a little pump of the fist from Horford, towel waving, if he really embraces it, I just see it meaning an awful lot for this team.
I don't see why he wouldn't. Because at the end of the day, I know that, you want to be a starter, but if you know that this rotation is what's working best for the team, they're not cutting your salary. You're still going to get paid, but you're helping the team even more by coming off the bench.
Hmm. And you know what? He was playing like 34, 35 minutes a game, okay? He played 29 his first night as a backup. That'll probably fall to the 25 to 27 area. That could really, he's 33 years old. He's played a lot of basketball, started every game pretty much since his rookie year. That could add a little life to you. Mm-hmm. That could add a little life to your NBA for the final whatever years may be of this contract, 4 years or whatever. It could be a good thing all around, both for the team and the individual.
Mm-hmm. So the only thing that makes me a little bit question that is when I talked to Al Horford before the All-Star break, he didn't seem like a guy that was really into this.
Yeah, and I understand that.
I don't blame him for it a little bit. I think anybody who is a competitor would react the same way Al Horford is. Anybody who has the right balance of being a competitor and a good teammate. I think that's the balance that we have to find right here. And I think that's what Al Horford is, I don't want to say struggling with, but trying to find that proper balance. Because I think he wants to be a good teammate first and foremost. But at the same time, he's a competitor and he wants to be one of the starting five because that's the better player on the team.
And as somebody mentioned before, Kevin McHale later on in his career with Boston came off the bench.
Right.
And they still had Larry Bird and they still had Robert Parrish and they won championships. And there's no more better example than you have right here in Philadelphia, a guy that just went into the Hall of Fame last year in Bobby Jones, who never started, was that sixth guy off the bench for a great team. Al Horford can absolutely be that.
And my point is, it's not Brett Brown's job to necessarily sell that to Al Horford. It's his job to make the decision, but it's really the job of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Josh Richardson, and Tobias Harris to sell Al Horford on this is a better spot for you. Look, when we talked to Tobias Harris after the game against the Clippers, he said, well, Al was still on the floor in the final 5 minutes. When we needed that shutdown defense, he was there. He might be starting the game, but we still need him in those clutch moments because he's that good a player. So it's up to them to really jump out and really own this with this is their new starting five. Maybe Glenn Robinson III is your number three, which makes the most sense. And then you have these guys really take ownership of being the starting five and the new look starting five of this team. And then that'll make it a lot easier for Al Horford to realize, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Because right now, everything is all about building up that chemistry. So once you get to the playoffs, you're clicking on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A big advantage that they'll have in the playoffs also is close games down the stretch. There's a lot of stoppages there. I mean, you have fouls, you have strategy that's going on. Obviously, NBA has a ton of timeouts. Brett is almost at the point where he has the luxury of going offense, defense. You know, he can have Al Horford maybe in there for defensive purposes, and then when teams come down, your Sixers come down and teams are looking to foul Ben Simmons, you know, you can get Horford back into the game when he goes to foul and to play defense. You can get him out offensively where that might be your struggle with Al Horford and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, that you can go to a Glenn Robinson the third. Like, he's got a deep enough bench now where he can play with that, where he really hasn't had that before.
Okay, and now the other thing that we got into yesterday with Brett during practice was this whole thing that is really, it's really come to a head now at the All-Star break, and I hope it's the end of it. And it's the narrative that we've even been talking about it all week, that Ben and Joe either hate each other or they can't coexist and they can't play together, right? It's a personal thing and it's a professional thing. These two guys, it's, you know, they don't like each other. I don't see any evidence of that. I see, especially after the All-Star break, I see guys that actually enjoy playing with one another. And I see Ben Simmons comfortable enough. Like, you might look at Ben Simmons, or you might look at Joel Embiid and say, oh, it's all one-sided. He's the guy putting out the tweet saying, my brother, my boy, right? Well, who was the guy running on the court, Trey, slapping ass at the All-Star game?
That'd be Ben Simmons.
That would be Ben Simmons.
Uh-huh.
James, go ahead one more time. You can get it.
Oh, jeepers.
Oh, jeepers. Ben Simmons slapping that ass, right? Uh-huh. And Joel Embiid turns around, sees it's his boy, and, you know, he could crack a little smile, right? He's having some fun with it. I think Ben is entertained by Joel Embiid. But this is where I need the greater translation, Bob. You have Brett Brown addressing the media, and he gets asked about that coexisting of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and whether or not it can happen and whether or not they can have success. I don't know what he is really getting at here, but maybe you could break it down for me. It's about 45 seconds, so stay with Brett as he talks about this. Maybe you can help us figure it out.
Stay focused on this one.
You just got to stay focused.
Yeah.
It's hard to, but we're going to try. And okay, folks, by all means, if you know what Brett's saying here, jump right into it. Here it is. Brett Brown, yesterday at practice, talking about whether or not Ben and Joe can coexist.
There's so much talk about, you know, can they coexist? How do they play together? Are we going to play fast? Are we going to play slow? And they coexist as it relates to, like, you know, people get along and coexist fine. And it's true. Sometimes, you know, like Ben's just a runaway train, and lately's been this wrecking ball, and I say that with tremendous sort of praise. Like, he's defensively and offensively, he's a wrecking ball. And he showed every bit why he belongs in an All-Star game, even with a limited kind of role that he had in Chicago. And, you know, Joel is Joel at a post and this and that. And so the narrative kind of grows and swells for different reasons from time to time. And to be in Chicago and to, you know, talk about one another in that environment on different teams, it didn't surprise me. I would be lying if I didn't say I was thrilled to read what I read, but it doesn't surprise me. I just think it validates to the rest of the sort of basketball hoop world that life's not as bad as sometimes it's made out to be here in Philadelphia.
I'm sorry. Want you. He's not wrong.
I can live a lie running for my life. I will always want you.
There he is, Ben Simmons.
I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break you up.
He's a wrecking ball, Trey.
Hello.
Yeah. Is Coach wrong? Is Brett wrong?
Again, like, once he hit wrecking ball, I was done. My mind just
went to Miley. Done.
Yeah, I was
naked Miley on a big wrecking ball.
Yeah. It's wrecking ball.
Mm. Would you like the translation?
Swinging back and forth. I was trying to.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
She's wearing like old man undies in that video.
Yeah, big draws.
Oh, really?
Yeah, big old whitey tighties.
All right. Yeah, Bob, go ahead. What's Brett saying there? Translate, please.
You a whitey tighty man, Bob?
No, I thought it was tighty whities, but.
Tighty whities is generally.
Yeah, okay. No,
yeah. But whatever.
we'll break it down.
So, all right. So he talks about them coexisting. Do we play fast? Do we play slow? And then he goes to, they get along. All right, so fast or slow, obviously that's always a conversation. Do they get along? Brett doesn't care, you know, but he can live with it, whatever. But he says fast or slow, and then he immediately goes into, yeah, Ben's a runaway train, a wrecking ball. Look what he did in Chicago. Showed that he told that he belonged. He's just been playing great lately. I love him. I love him. I love him. And Joel's Joel. we want to play fast.
What?
We love what Ben Simmons is doing. That's the way we want to play.
Mm.
And I really don't think he's saying this in a demeaning way. I think he's saying, and we have that 7-2 guy that we got to figure out how to get the ball to also.
I feel like one of the things I hear is, yes, they can coexist, but it's like half-court set, Joel's the guy. Running with the basketball, it's Ben's game.
But that's, and that's what I want to do.
I want to run.
I really do. I want to run. I want to jack. But we do have this 7-2 guy that we have to keep happy also. So, and then his saying that they talking about each other didn't surprise me, but it was good to see.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care if they get along or not. He
came
doesn't.
In like a wrecking ball. Now, you put that thought in my head, Trey. So now all I hear is Brett Brown singing Wrecking Ball.
Yeah, I did. He was going. I
would pay to watch Brett at karaoke.
It would
be awesome.
The kid is a baller.
We clawed, we chained, we our hearts in vain. That's I want to watch that.
Yeah.
And then Ben comes in with the Wrecking Ball chorus.
Swinging on the ball.
Yeah. And then Joel Embiid's there filming the whole thing, putting it on Instagram. Steve in Alda, let's jump up to him. He's got something on the Brett translation. What are you hearing there, Steve-O?
What I'm hearing is the guy talking strictly about coexisting on the floor. He's not even factoring in the outside BS that they don't like each other. He's either unaware of it or totally doesn't care, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, real quick, Steve, I totally agree with you. I don't think he cares.
But what about the last line? It's not as bad as people say it is in Philadelphia?
Because it doesn't matter.
Okay.
He's still talking about the floor. He has no concept of... what do you think, he's on Instagram? He has no concept of these guys or the belief that these guys don't like each other outside. He's talking about existing on the floor, period. And as far as building up Ben and only mentioning Joe, I think it's like, you know, he's got to keep telling his side piece that she's pretty. His wife at home is the steady, you know we're together. We got this.
Wow. Yeah, Steve. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think you should teach a marketing or PR class, man. Hey, are you a basketball fan?
Yes.
You want to? Oh, well,
good for you, Steve Sowerway.
Yeah, you a hockey fan at all?
Yeah, I'm a 4-for-4.
Oh, you're a 4-for-4. You want to go to the Flyers Wise Fight for Lives Carnival?
Oh, I can't.
I can't go. Oh no. How about Temple basketball tonight?
I can't.
You know what? Thanks for the call, Steve. Our callers, you know what? They got lives, man. They got things going on.
Yeah.
Things are popping. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe they have their company holiday parties tonight, too. Yeah, I mean, it is a popular time for them.
Easter's.
I was going to wear, I couldn't make it last night, but I was going to wear all green. I thought it was a St. Patrick's Day party.
The diarrhea since Easter's.
Easter's.
We did miss you last night, Bobby. We got a chance to bond.
I drank one for you. Tell.
We poured one out, and then we drank another.
Proud.
610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. The Flyers Wise Fight for Lives Carnival, by the way, is this Sunday, February 23rd, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The carnival creates a sense of excitement in the community every single year as fans of all ages meet their favorite Flyers players, coaches, and beloved alumni as well, while getting autographs and photos, playing games on and off the ice, and enjoying carnival-themed attractions throughout the day. Go to FlyersCarnival.com for your tickets. Proceeds benefit Flyers Wives Carnival, benefits Flyers Charities, and I'll be there this year in a dunk tank. So there's that.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a dunk tank?
No.
Is this?
Do you know what proper attire is?
I'll wear like a Flyers warm up jersey or something. Yeah.
A Flyers
warm up. Do a white T-shirt.
Well, I don't think anyone needs that.
It's not Miley Cyrus.
I think you should wear a onesie bathing suit.
I was going to say like old school, like 1940s, like, you know, flapper era men's bathing suit that comes all the way up.
Make sure the water's not that cold now.
Shrinkage?
Yeah, you got to make sure.
There's a lot of cameras around. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You better ask them to keep that water at 82 degrees.
I'll wear sweatpants.
You should put like nipple tassels under your shirt.
Samantha!
What did
Sam? What's wrong with you?
On the hub again? What's going on, Sam?
Dion's been away for a week and she's a
That would be such a gritty thing.
Sam? Gritty? Samantha. Gritty wears
nipple. Oh, Gritty would totally wear nipple tassels.
What is the HR number?
I need to know. I need to tell if I'm violated.
You've got to get Sam. Stop surfing the hub.
Jeez Louise. We're talking about helping charities, Sam.
Yes.
And you're like, nipple tassels? Wow. What are those?
I'm making it more fun.
She's not wrong. Although
are always a part.
I don't. You know what? You know what I do need? I need a caller on Monday morning. And be like, Farzad, I'm trying to bring my kid to the Flyers carnival. You got nipple tassels in the dump tank. Thanks. Yes, that was a suggestion by Samantha. Time of the Fanatic is 8:43.
Farzad and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Coming up, 9 o'clock, Mark Jackson will join us, NBC Sports Philadelphia Sixers pre- and post-game analyst. But there is a trial afoot today.
Afoot.
JT Realmuto. By the way, just a friendly reminder for everybody out there, Realmuto. Realmuto. Is how the gentleman says it.
Hopefully we're saying that for the next 8 to 10 years.
Hopefully. Let's make it happen. Sam Wilson, go ahead. What is our Twitter poll today?
Today we asked, whose side are you on in the arbitration hearing? JT Realmuto's or the Phillies? Pick a side, you coward. And obviously we have two options. We have just under 3,200 votes. And Mark, you will be proud for the moment. 95% say JT Realmuto.
That's awesome.
There's still time for it to change.
That's
so don't
great.
Get your hopes
so 95
up.
Is really 100.
95 is a Twitter poll of 500.
Wow. No, embracing him so he doesn't get his heart broken, Bob. That's what good friends do.
Well, thank you.
If his heart gets broken, we'll give him some nipple tassels.
Because now people...
Cheers up everybody.
A guy tweeted me a GIF of a guy with nipple tassels. It's not something I needed today, all right? That's not what I was...
Sam.
What I woke up today going, you know what I really need? Nipple tassels.
Mark and nipple tassels would be hilarious.
I'm not really envisioning it.
FanFest 2020.
It seems like Sam is dying on Nipple Tassel Hill.
Like really on it. I don't know. What's going on here?
The HR meeting later today. I don't know, guys. You just wouldn't let me go. Sam, could you step out of the room for a second? I just want to talk to Mark. Mark, are you okay? I'm offended. Impossible to
agree. You ever get chafed nipples while we're on the subject?
No, because I don't have the razor issue you have.
Awful.
Yeah, runners get that, actually. Yeah. It's really, really bad.
That is hell.
Andy Bernard in The Office, I believe, had to tape the nipples. Or didn't tape the nipples, but he should have taped the nipples.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing until a buddy of mine ran a marathon in like high school. And I was like,
terrible.
What do you have to do?
Yeah.
He's like, I got to go out and get this tape. I go, for what?
Nipple tape.
Arts and crafts, art class, what is the deal? And he's just like, nipple tape.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon.
So you can't just put any kind of tape there? As a beast.
You probably could, but it'd be painful.
Gaffer tape?
As a beast.
I don't know.
I guess
it has to be nipple friendly tape. Huh?
Yeah, I don't think you want like duct tape,
Scotch tape.
You just not going Gorilla tape. I mean, you know,
no,
I'm not gonna.
Why, Jamie? Did you get it?
I've had chafed nipples once. It was awful.
Like your nipples are huge. So
no, they're not huge. They're dark.
Well, in a lacrosse jersey, would you have to wear them?
Yeah, sometimes the shoulder pads could get your nipples.
See, just. This is why you just live by my motto, don't work out ever. And you'll be fine. That's what I find. Don't work out, eat more nachos. That's a happy life. Did you see this story? I believe it's out in New York, Trey.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the most millennial thing ever. A mom and dad are punishing their daughter. I believe the daughter's 20 years old.
Okay.
And they say, you're punished, no cell phone. Take away her cell phone.
She's 20 years old.
Yeah. The daughter, I don't know how she do it. I guess she used the house phone, called the cops.
She's called the police.
Her parents basically confiscated her cell phone. Is that not the most... Now, technically I'm a millennial by like a like 4 months or whatever it is. To me, millennials are more people that live their whole life with a cell phone. Like, they're the first generation to have a cell phone from, like, you know, birth. Whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come
they
out.
Pop out the womb texting.
Yeah, they text the doctor.
I'm here.
Yeah.
They text wham, wham. Oh, the baby's crying. They're fine. I that's what I consider. But this story is pretty much what I really think of as the most millennial thing ever. And I realize that us millennials are older now. But that's what I think of.
And what did the police do?
I believe they said, get the hell out of here. What are you talking about? What first off, how are you calling us? If they took your phone, how are you calling us?
Huh. They have a landline at the house?
Evidently.
Do you have a landline at your house?
No. God, no.
Do you, Trey?
Yeah, just, I don't even know. It rings, but.
Yeah. We had one at the old house, but the house I'm renting now, no. I don't have a landline.
Yeah, but evidently that's the way it went down. This lady, she called 911 after her parents.
She called 911?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, what do you think she did was call the cops?
There's a general number to call the police department.
Nobody knows that number.
Yeah, what is that number?
You can look it up.
How? I don't have a phone. I know the number for 911.
What, you want to flip through the yellow pages?
That's how stupid kids are now.
I'm sorry.
Wait. One time I accidentally called 911 when I was like 8.
I'm sorry, by the way. Wait, you did?
Yeah, I tried to order Spider-Man on HBO, and that was the number listed. And I dialed it, and I was terrified, and they were like, what's your emergency? Blah, blah, blah. I hung up.
And then I need Spider-Man.
Well, it was me and my brother home, and he was like, if I was 8, he was 13 watching me, and I was like, oh my God, they're going to like arrest my mom for not being home.
Yeah.
So I went to call my mom and tell her the story, and they were still on the line because they thought something actually happened to me. And then they sent a cop out.
My apologies, by the way. This woman was not 20. She was 36.
Okay.
So well, that's way different. Yeah, I thought it was a kid.
The parents canceled her cell phone.
Throw her in jail for the weekend.
So she had been on the mom and dad cell phone plan for quite some time.
Yeah, okay,
that was
that's
a sad
different.
Day when I got kicked off the family plan.
Oh, I feel like that's the day you really become an adult.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, for our grandparents, it was like when they went to war.
When they got their draft notice. Now it's when you get off your family's phone plan.
When the Germans were bombing Pearl Harbor.
Oh,
that's when our grandparents became men and women. When we became men and women, it was when mom and dad are like, hey, look, all right, you're almost 40. It's time to get your own cell phone plan. That's a very millennial thing, too. 610-632-0975. Back to JT Real Muto for a quick second here before we talk to Mark Jackson. How the Phillies and Real Muto did not agree on a long-term deal before the file date for arbitration is still beyond me. So now they have to go through this protocol, which is awful, over $2.5 million. To me, it's just a dumb thing that's part of the business here, especially when Matt Klentak has already acknowledged they want to bring him back here on a long-term deal. JT Real Muto has said, you know what, $10 million, we're good. Well, then, you know, why are we even having a trial then? If that's the case, why is there even a trial if the man's like, nah, $10 million, 12.5, whatever. Why does that even matter? Well, it matters because it's the sport. It's the business of the sport itself. And JT Real...
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.